Welcome to the Living Vertical Diabetic Cast, one person's attempt to make sense of diabetes through adventure. Nothing you hear in this podcast is meant to be taken as medical advice, or really any other kind of advice for that matter. If you find it interesting, educational, entertaining, or enlightening, visit our website, livingvertical.org, and support our efforts by connecting with us on social media and buying a print or two from our store. If you think this podcast is the greatest thing since sliced bread, do us a favor and go on iTunes, leave us a review there of the podcast, and encourage other folks to listen. Or to be fair, if you really hate the podcast, maybe go on there and leave a review so as to warn other people that they should avoid listening. Either way, if you write us a review, it's super helpful. This podcast today is going to be about the Wind River Project. And I know I've mentioned this a bunch and I've been posting about it a lot on social media, a lot of the photos that I've been putting up on Instagram recently for Diabetes Awareness Month have been from the Wind River Project. But going through all this media has actually been really useful to me in trying to create this podcast, because in the process of creating a short film out of the Wind River Project, I've had a chance to really let the idea about the project and the story really percolate in my mind. And for me, climbing is only a part of the action. Really being able to take the media, the video, the still images, the audio, and have these things to take home with me after the fact, and then months later, after I've had a chance to really process the experience in my head, sit down and start to edit those things and make pretty creative, nice snippets out of those, that's where, you know, you're really getting to sift through the mud and pick out those little nuggets of gold and the bright spots along the way that maybe weren't so evident to you while you were in the middle of the project. And that's been a big part of this process for me. Now, for those of you who might not know about the Wind River Project, let me take a moment and bring you up to speed. The Wind River Project derives its name from the Wind River Range in western Wyoming, not too far from the Grand Teton and the surrounding national park there near Yellowstone. And the Wind River Range is really where I fell in love with mountains for the first time. Back in 2008, I took a road trip with Stephanie out west for our first time, and this was after having grown up in New York and just kind of cut my teeth on climbing a little bit in the Gunks in the Hudson Valley of New York, and I wanted to go and see mountains, so we headed west, and for whatever reason, I had picked up a guidebook that had that featured climbs in the Wind River Range, and it said there was a lot of good moderate climbing and that it was really spectacular. The approach seemed pretty reasonable. Looking in the guidebook before we left on this trip back in 2008, I remember thinking to myself, well, how hard can it be? It's only, you know, 5'4", 5'2", what have you, looking at some of the easier routes that were back there. And when we actually got back in there, of course, the thing that turned out to be the most difficult after coming all the way across the country, or most of the way across the country, was the long approach and just the amount of work that was involved in getting yourself and enough food and equipment to last for a week out there, as well as complete several climbs, was a huge undertaking and a huge effort. But at the same time, it was my first real encounter with the mountains, and I remember waking up at night and getting out of the tent to pee and just staring up at the stars and being blown away, having never seen anything like that before out east, and waking up in the morning almost forgetting where I was, and then unzipping the tent, sticking my head out, and just seeing this mountain that was looming over me, larger than life and more rock on every side of me than I could ever have imagined or wanted to climb in a lifetime. And right then was when I realized that this type of climbing in these kind of rugged mountains was what really made me feel alive and really made me feel connected to climbing as an overall lifestyle. The Wind River Range is a really pure area in many ways. Almost nothing about it is convenient, and very few places within that particular mountain range are overpopulated. It's a kind of place that makes you work for everything, but at the same time, if you are willing to work for it and you're willing to put the time and effort to hike distances upwards of 8 to 10 miles at a minimum to get in there, it's so, so rewarding because the views are spectacular. And the fact that few people get to see those types of vistas and get to take in those types of experiences in some ways makes you feel like you're witnessing something that is really and truly special. And it's a harsh environment. It's not someplace that is very user friendly. You can't just duck out if you feel like you've had enough and, you know, head out and get yourself a room or sleep in your car or what have you. Like, when you're back there and you're a full day's approach from any sort of even trailhead where you could sleep in your car or have any source of comfort. And it really exacts a high price from people who want to come back there. And that's part of the reason why it's not super crowded. It's not like Yosemite where, you know, when you come down off of El Cap, there's tons of people all over the place. And you can just go to the store and you can get yourself something to eat or something to drink. Out here in the winds, when you're out there and that's it. And you have to get yourself in a headspace where you're able to deal not only with the difficult nature of living in that type of environment, but you also have to be able to deal with the psychological elements of being quite isolated and not having any sort of escape route at the ready. So after completing Project 365, I had an opportunity to climb Mount Kilimanjaro with a group of fellow type 1 diabetic athletes. And that experience was something that was a very interesting way to follow up Project 365, which was done on a shoestring, because my climb of Mount Kilimanjaro in 2013 was something that was much more well put together. It was funded by a large pharmaceutical organization, and we had everything that we needed and then some, and I was just invited along to be part of that. It wasn't something that I had put together myself. And that experience in 2013, while it was very poignant and I made some really, really good friends on that trip, it was very different for me from what I'm used to in terms of climbing, because on Kilimanjaro, you had porters and guides carrying all your stuff, setting up your camp at the end of the day, cooking your food. And it was just almost unreal coming back to your tent being set up for you and having hot coffee brought to you first thing in the morning when your porter comes and wakes you up and says, "Hey, good morning, it's time for coffee," you know. And after that experience, I started thinking about what I wanted the next Living Vertical project to be. Because I went from Project 365, which was my own creation through Living Vertical, and then Kilimanjaro, which was something that I participated in, but it wasn't my creation. And then kind of onto that next development phase where I said, all right, what do I want to do next? And I really started thinking about it. And the only thing that came to my mind was that I wanted to do something that would be real and that would be pure and that would connect me back to my roots in terms of my real love in climbing. And of course, I struggled with the reality that if you walk up to, you know, 10 people on the street and you say, "Hey, have you ever heard of the Wind River Range?" Even if you specify that it's the Wind River Range in Wyoming, most people will say no, because it's not the kind of place that is very highly regarded or very well known in our culture. Whereas if you wanted to get something that's a little more high profile, well, you could just say, oh, I'm going to go climb Everest. And then everybody's into it and excited and wants to have you on their program and wants to, you write a guest blog post or what have you. But for me, I really felt burdened to get back to my roots and to do something that would have a lot of significance for me personally, rather than something that would just be easy for people to understand. At the same time, though, I did want to have some sort of final product to show folks in order to really convey the message of empowerment and, you know, show that people with diabetes are able to push the limits and challenge themselves and also challenge standards in general, that, you know, not just to do things that are hard for people with diabetes, but to do things that are just objectively hard. And that was the message that I wanted to be able to send. And of course, operating in a place that was so obscure as the Wind River Range, I realized that we would have to, again, you know, bring some film equipment out there with us and make a movie out of it. And that's what I'm currently in the process of doing. I just cut down a trailer for the Wind River Project, and I'm pretty psyched about that. And you can check that out if you visit our homepage, livingvertical.org. That's right up there on the front of the website. And one of the things that was different about this project for me, aside from Project 365, was that the Wind River Project was going to involve more type 1 diabetic climbers than myself. It was going to be a Team Living Vertical expedition where myself and several partners would venture out and be the first team of all diabetics to establish a first ascent. And to the best of my knowledge, that would be the first such occurrence anywhere in recorded climbing history. And of course, what better place to do that than the Wind River Range, where nobody would know about it or care about it. And it would be a huge amount of effort and work to tell that story through film. The Wind River Project was a real eye-opening experience for me. I thought that I would be ready, just kind of coming off the couch and going out there and giving it a good shot. And the reality was that I was quite unprepared, having just had to deal with the birth of my daughter and moving across the country and being on the East Coast. And there, you know, I have lots of excuses for why my fitness was subpar, but I definitely went into the expedition knowing that I was basically the weak link in our team. Matt and Blake were both significantly stronger than I was. And I believe that's still the case today, even months later, of course. But going into that situation, knowing that I was going to be struggling from the very get-go, made it a huge challenge for me. And so one of the things that I've run into a lot between Living Vertical and, you know, the various climbing projects I've done is that some people have this perception that, oh, I don't struggle and that everything is easy for me because I climb mountains, so big deal. And one of the things that I think and I hope will come out in the film once it's complete is that this project was, I would say, far and away for me personally, the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. It was unquestionably more difficult than Project 365. I felt more alone, more isolated, and I think that, you know, going into the wilderness for an extended period of time was exacerbated by the fact that my daughter had just been born and I felt like I was leaving her behind and that I was missing these precious moments of her newborn infancy. And that really caused me to second guess myself and question literally every second of every day whether what I was doing was worth it or not. And coupling that with the fact that my climbing fitness was just not up to par and that I was not able to climb nearly as much and nearly as hard as my partners, it made it a huge psychological battle for me beyond just the normal, okay, climbing is hard, this hurts my fingers, I'm tired at the end of the day, I have to make my own food, what about my blood sugar? I mean, there were all of those things still in the mix, but on top of that, there was this real sense of doubt and failure And failure on a personal level, not on a climbing level or on an athletic level or something that I want level, but like that I was failing at life as a person because I was going out of my way to take on this project, but I was leaving my daughter behind, and that's all I could think about was that I was leaving her behind and that I wasn't really doing anything significant or worthwhile or even really making a contribution to the efforts of the team. And I've always been my own worst enemy by a long stretch. And so ultimately, the only way that I was able to cope, and even that I honestly did quite poorly, but the only way I was able to cope was by really stepping back from my own investment personally and taking a look at the bigger picture of what we were accomplishing together as a team of diabetic climbers, and that I had to accept the fact that my role was going to be one that revolved more around the storytelling and the photography aspect and the video than it was around going out there and ticking off a hard climb and being able to have something to brag about, because having spent the last year or so editing the film Project 365 and not really doing a whole lot of climbing, and then having my daughter born, I just was not up to that. And so I was forced to really take comfort and take value out of what Matt and Blake were doing. So I got to get sort of a third party enjoyment from their exploits and their feats. And I got to actually be inspired, because I wasn't doing anything that I felt was inspiring, but watching them as my partners get up every day, totally psyched on climbing, not worrying about what their blood sugar, you know, if it was a little too high, correcting it, if it was a little too low, correcting it, and then saying, oh, hey, we should like hike up that 2,000 foot scree slope and poke around and see if we can find some cracks that look good, if we can maybe, you know, put up a couple of rope lengths, and then if we can't, we're going to have to rappel down and then hike all the way back down. And, you know, going through all of these things that were so arduous, but they were completely psyched and they were ready. And it made me realize that even while this was not ideal for me, that I was getting the opportunity to benefit majorly from the incredible inspiration of my teammates. And that's been something that I really want to give back to the community, because it's something that I experienced firsthand and it changed my life. So the interview that I'm about to play for you, it was conducted in the Wind River Range on our very last day of the project, literally right before we shouldered our packs and headed out the 20 some odd miles out to our vehicles. And during the entirety of this interview, one of the things that I have to commend Matt for, who you're about to hear, more than anything else, except for possibly how hard and how impressive his climbing is the fact that he was able to make it through this interview, sitting remarkably still and being very calm despite the fact that there were mosquitoes swarming literally all over his face. And I suppose that one of the things that I should mention is that in the Wind River Range, and particularly this past year, the mosquitoes were absolutely awful. And so there's a possibility that we just sort of tuned them out at this point. But it was still really impressive. And I remember sitting there with the camera thinking, like, how is he not like jumping up and down and cursing and running all over the place? Because that's pretty much what I was doing behind the camera, because I had it up on a tripod and, you know, the bugs were just all over the place. So anyhow, this is Matt Spahn telling us a little bit about what it was like being part of the first all-diabetic, first ascent expedition during the Wind River Project this past summer.
Okay, my name's Matt Spahn, and I'm from Portland, Oregon. I was diagnosed with diabetes when I was 14. and I'm 29 now, going on 30, and happily married. And
that's definitely a question. Yeah.
And I love to climb, so I help run a climbing gym in Portland, Oregon, with my dad.
So, a little bit about the expedition. What is it that we're doing out here in the middle of nowhere with diabetes and climbing?
So we came to the Wind River Range as a team living vertical to establish first ascents or to do unprecedented climbs as an all type 1 diabetic climbing team. And it's three of us, and we spent a lot of time shuttling in gear, getting on the walls, but mainly we came here to just sort of show what diabetics can do. I think we did a good job of that. You know, we didn't do everything we wanted to do, but we got a lot done. But I think primarily we accomplished showing that diabetics are athletes. We can hopefully empower others to achieve their goals and do what they want to do, and, you know, push diabetes to the forefront. And I think, you know, that's what the expedition was designed to do, and I think that's what it did.
So what is your relationship with diabetes and climbing? Like, why, you know, why do this instead of, like, let's say, do triathlon or run a marathon or something like that? Like, what is it about? What's the connection for you between diabetes and climbing?
Well, for me, I started climbing before I had diabetes. So I started climbing when I was 7, and I was diagnosed again when I was 14. And so it was sort of a natural process to just stick with climbing. But I think as I've evolved as a climber and age, I see a lot of similarities between climbing and diabetes. There's a lot of internal struggle. It's often, you know, one person accomplishing, you know, your own goals, your own desires. And I think diabetes is often fought alone. You have to manage everything yourself. You can't expect other people to do anything for you. And it's the same as climbing. If you want to accomplish something, you have to push and strive, and it comes with a lot of hard work. And I think same with diabetes. You know, there's times when, you know, you feel like shit and you don't want to do anything, and you sort of have to push past that. You got to push past, you know, high blood sugars, low blood sugars, being depressed because you have diabetes. And I think, you know, there's goals you can set with both, and I think that they sort of go hand in hand. You know, you have to be super in control, I think, to be an accomplished climber. And being an accomplished climber helps you manage your diabetes. And I don't think you have to be necessarily a pro-level climber or someone, you know, pushing the limits, but I think any sort of activity you do is always going to help you manage your diabetes. And my activity just happens to be climbing, and I think that it correlates really well to diabetes.
What would you say about, like, the first few days of the expedition, kind of like once we were just kind of just getting our feet wet?
So the first few days, I think, for the expedition were significantly harder than we had anticipated. The horses dropped our gear off short of Titcomb Basin, and we had to shuttle pretty heavy loads, you know, sometimes up to 100 pounds, maybe a little more. And we were doing, you know, 15 to 20 miles a day, shuttling loads to our base camp, and it was a lot of work. It's like sore legs, just tired, always having to go back. You memorize every step of the trail, and, you know, there's mud everywhere. It's like walking through a bog. Feet were just disgusting, just like, you know, pruny and gross. Everything soaked. And once we got to base camp, it was rejuvenating. I mean, it's just beautiful here. The walls are huge. So I think it was a hard first few days getting our feet wet. I think at the start, right when we left the car, I think we were pretty psyched. But then once we realized, you know, we had a lot of gear that we needed to shuttle to base camp, it became a little more serious. And then I think, too, once we got to base camp, it was definitely like a beautiful setting. We're sort of at ease at that point, but then I think we started looking around at the walls and realizing just how huge they are and enormous, and you know, tons of talus fields to get to the bases. So the first day of climbing, Blake and I scoped a dihedral on the northwest flank of Fremont Peak. And to us from the ground, I think we were like, oh, it looks like cake. Like, we'll just go up and climb it in a day. There's no existing route up the northwest flank, and I guess we sort of didn't really think about that too much as to why there wasn't one. But when we got up there, we were actually pretty stoked, because the first pitch right away, we were like, oh, it looks great, it looks fun. And we did the first pitch, all free. It was probably like 11A maybe. And we got to a ledge, and then we started climbing up from there and realizing that the systems we saw from the ground, all the cracks, the dihedrals, they were actually all huge chasms or enormous off-widths or chimneys. And then slowly we started to realize that we were going to have to sort of navigate around all these systems. The first day we put up about three pitches. Blake led a second pitch, which was just this beautiful 5'10", but a little, you know, a little loose, lots of sort of hollow flakes on it, but still a really fun pitch. And then the pitch above that is where I think a lot of like grainy rock, loose, and then sort of going to a blank expansive face above that, where we had to put in a bolt and then a pin. We found a place for a pin, but that was, I mean, there's no place for any trad gear on it. And so we had got a late start that day. We didn't leave camp until about 11, so it was already getting late, so we decided to call it a day and just wrap down. And then we came back to camp and looked at the line again and thought for sure we knew where we were going. We saw some more systems, and we thought, okay, these are definitely going to be easily climbable, super accessible. And so we went back up a day later and finished the face pitch, which I don't know. I mean, we didn't free it yet, but I would say it's probably about 12, somewhere in the 12 range. But just goes to a super exposed sort of overhanging arete that the air just drops away below you. Pretty beautiful position, a little eerie and a little scary. But then above that, we ran into a huge chimney system that we had to climb, and we worked our way up that, and then we had to do a big traverse out to the what we thought would be the sort of home free section of the climb, which is a ridge line. And we pulled out onto the ridge and did one more pitch up that, and realized that it just goes to more open faces and pretty expansive wall above. And we got about six pitches up, and I think we just decided to call it quits, because we weren't even, you know, I think we had maybe 12 more pitches to go. And then looking at the top, we realized we were going to have to also rappel the entire climb. It sort of tops out on a spire. We found out that doesn't really go to any main summit, and so we would have to equip the entire line with a rappel route with lots of bolts, and we just sort of opted not to do it and leave it as an open project. Maybe come back in a couple years, a year, or let someone else have at it. But it's I think going to be an amazing line when it's accomplished, but it's a huge wall for sure. And I think it's just going to take some work equipping it with rappel stations, and it would go free probably at maybe 12A. Most of the pitches will probably be under that, like in the 11 and 10 range. And you know, we didn't get the first ascent of that, but it's a big wall, and it's not demoralizing at all. It just sort of I think it allows us to have an opportunity to come back, but it also makes us realize that there's a lot of a lot of planning involved in putting up first ascents, and especially on, you know, it's maybe a grade 4 big wall, and I don't know if it'd be grade 5, but it's going to take more than one day to put up a first ascent on that section of Fremont Peak, and it's pretty beautiful looking, but it's hard, and I think it was a bit eerie at times how exposed it was, and the wind was pretty crazy up there. One day, maybe 60 mile an hour gusts, and yeah, so that was our attempt to get our way up, you know, an unclimbed portion of Fremont Peak, and I think it'll go someday for sure.
What do you think the difference is, or like, for people who don't understand, like, putting up the first ascent, what's the significance of a group of people with type 1 diabetes coming out and doing this instead of, say, like, something really well-known, like climbing Mount Everest?
Well, I think the difference between doing this and climbing Mount Everest is multifaceted. I think oftentimes anybody can pay to get up Mount Everest. You just throw money at it, you know, whether it's a drug company giving you money or whether you have big pockets and people haul your stuff up for you. You just have to walk to the top, and there's not a lot of technical difficulties in climbing Mount Everest or a lot of the big summits. You know, with this, we're on our own. We pack in everything, we set up our own camps, and we're pushing the lines forward. We don't have people setting lines for us. We don't have guides equipping routes and allowing us to just use the senders to go up them. We're physically forging a path up a blank wall and climbing it ourselves. We're leading the ropes up. We're placing all the equipment. You know, it's much different, you know, especially with the first ascent. You have no idea what lies ahead. It's a total blindness. Like, you can look as much as you want through binoculars, and you don't know until you touch that piece of rock, till you're up close, face to face with it, what it's going to be, what it's going to hold. And I think there's a lot of intimidation in regards to that, but I think we came out to do it to show that, you know, there might be intimidation, you might be scared to go do it, but I think it sort of goes hand in hand with diabetes, where, you know, again, you're facing diabetes alone. You don't have someone taking care of you, you know, feeding you, measuring out all your carbs, you know, measuring out your insulin dosages. And I think climbing the trade peaks, that's what you have. You have people measuring everything out for you. I think you have people, you know, feeding you, doing all this stuff, and out here we're doing it all ourselves, just like you do with diabetes. And I think that's what's significant about it, is it's just you and the rock, and it's just you and diabetes.
So what were, like, the biggest challenges of being out here, and how did those challenges impact the climbing?
So I think for me, one of the biggest challenges is being away from my wife. You know, we're newly married, and I think it's always difficult to leave the people you love behind for an extended period of time. And I think in the long run that affected, you know, at times when I'm on the rock, I'm fine, but, you know, in camp you have a lot of free time to think about things, and I think, you know, that affects your state of mind. You know, there's definitely a lot of loneliness involved. You know, you question whether it's worth it to leave the person you love or the people you love for something like this. And it sort of, it can definitely play tricks on your mindset. And for me, you know, I think that's the biggest struggle. And, you know, I think we all left people, you know, that we love. We all left, you know, jobs for a little bit. We all made sacrifices to come out here. And I think we always question those sacrifices, whether, you know, being out here and sort of pushing the envelope is worth it, or whether we should be you know, at home helping out. And for me, you know, I think I wanted to be out here, but things came up and I decided that it was more important to maybe cut the trip a little short and get home and help out with some things that came up that I needed to help out with. And that also, though, allowed us to look at another line up Fremont Peak, an old aid line called the West Face Dihedral. And then we decided to go for the first free ascent of that line. And, you know, it sort of gave us a little impetus to push, and it ignited a flame. We knew that we were going to all be leaving a little bit early. And so we hiked up there and went for it, and we got the first free ascent of the West Face Dihedral, which probably goes at maybe 12B crux pitch. It was super wet and seepy, so, you know, maybe in drier conditions it might be a little easier, but it was still, I think, a pretty phenomenal push to go up there and free the line and free it on site, you know. It's been up since the 70s. No one has ever freed it, and to be able to go up there and on site the crux pitches, which were old aid lines, and work our way all the way from the base to the summit in one push was pretty pretty awesome experience. And I think definitely will have allowed Team Living Vertical to leave a mark in the Titcomb Basin area. And, you know, I think that's a super proud accomplishment, and, it'll be memorable. You know, I think for me, I'll always remember it. I definitely want to come back out here and finish our first descent route. And I mean, the area is huge. There's thousands of first descent possibilities out here. It just so happens that we chose a difficult line. You know, next time we might do a little more, you know, looking and find easier lines. But, you know, we're able to get first ascents of shorter routes, little dome down the way. We got some first ascents on that, and we got sort of some hard single pitch first ascents on a block near camp. But, you know, the elusive one was the big wall first ascent. But I think the first free ascent is accomplishment in its own right. You know, it's a rarely done climb, even as an aid line, and we went up and free climbed it. So I'm pretty psyched.
One last question. So what do you see as like the takeaway? You know,
the takeaway from this trip and this expedition is multifaceted. Again, I think it shows that people with type 1 diabetes live with it every day. I mean, we're testing our blood sugars, we're injecting, we're constantly giving ourselves insulin to survive. You know, it's a hardship that people with type 1 diabetes have to face. But I think, you know, beyond that, it shows that because you have type 1 diabetes doesn't mean you have to be afraid to get out. You don't have to live a stagnant life. You don't have to be, you know, sitting on the couch, you know, scared to go for a jog, go for a walk. I mean, you can get out, you can do whatever you want. I think this expedition shows that type 1 diabetics are able to accomplish anything that people without diabetes can accomplish. You know, we're just as capable. Our disease doesn't slow us down. And oftentimes I think our disease inspires us to get out and push the envelope. And I hope that what people take away from this is that if they have type 1 diabetes, or if they have a family member or a child or a sibling with type 1 diabetes, that they can be inspired by us to face challenges in front of them, to go do what they want to do, whether it's climbing or whether it's, you know, triathlons or running or just backpacking. I mean, to get out and experience the world and not be afraid of low blood sugars or high blood sugars. I mean, you have to go at it in a, you know, knowledgeable way, a safe way. You have to bring you know, more stuff than the average person. You have to bring emergency kits, glucagon and glucose tablets, and, you know, extra insulin. But that's not even hardly a hindrance. You just pack it, and you realize you might need to treat a low blood sugar, or, you know, you might have to take, you know, a little bit extra insulin to counter effect adrenaline or that sort of thing. But I think for this expedition, it's important for people to take away that diabetics are not leading stagnant lives, that we're getting out there, that we're doing what we want to do, and that type 1 diabetes isn't a controlling factor in our lives. It's a nuisance, it's a hindrance, it's a disease that's hard to work with sometimes, but it doesn't prevent us from getting out and experience life and living it to its fullest.
And of course, right after this interview concluded, we began lugging all of our gear out of the Wind River Range, and I hiked myself almost into unconsciousness and had probably the worst low blood sugar experience that I've had in my entire 16 years with diabetes right after getting done, recording that interview. So it was a very eventful 2.5 weeks that we spent in the backcountry. We got a chance to put up a variety of routes. I put up one route that was absolutely on the low end of the levee there, which checked in at about 5.6 or so on a small dome up the way. There was a couple of 5.8s also that we put up on that same dome. None of these were main peaks that I'm referring to right now, so I don't know what the name is of them, but they were located just a little bit south of our camp in Titcomb Basin. And some of the other routes that Matt was referring to on the large block near camp, they were, you could probably call them a boulder problem, but you could also call them a short solo. But we used ropes for them, and those checked in between 512A and hard 513. So there was a variety of both length of climbs that we established as a team and also difficulty. And this entire experience was very meaningful, and I'm glad that to have the chance to share the inspiration that that these guys shared with me during our time back there. And there's a lot of terminology that you may not recognize if you're not a climber about the different grades and difficulties. And I would ask you to refer to the show notes, which will be on the blog at livingvertical.org in relationship to the Wind River Project and this podcast, so that if you're a little bit befuddled about, you know, what 5.11 means or 5.12 or grade 4 versus grade 5 in relationship to climbing, I mean, that all basically has to do with how hard a climb is and or how long it takes to go from the bottom to the top. But you can get that information. We'll have that linked in the notes at the website. I really hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as I've enjoyed being part of making it. Certainly listening to Matt's interview after several months away from the project. It's now Thanksgiving, and this interview with Matt had been recorded in July. So it's been a while that I've had to think about everything, and certainly months after the fact, it was an amazing trip, an amazing experience. In the moment when we were actually recording it, I was just really excited at the possibility of it being over quickly and being able to actually finally get a Diet Coke and get back to some semblance of civilization. But these experiences that we choose, and even the ones that we don't choose, that involve a considerable amount of suffering and forcing us to be durable, those are experiences that really stay with us and change us, I think, for the better. I'm in the process of creating a short film in collaboration with my partners, Matt and Blake, and a few other folks that are lending assistance. Hopefully that film will be done in a couple of months, depending on what everybody's availability looks like, where we will be able to show and tell more about this project. In the meantime, if you visit our website, livingvertical.org, you can see the short trailer version of the film, which has enough visuals to give you an idea to go kind of along with this podcast to see sort of what Matt is talking about and what I've been talking about. And also visit the project page, livingvertical.org/WRP, Wind River Project is what that stands for. And somebody just texted me. But anyways, that's where you can find out more information about the Wind River Project. And I should probably conclude the episode of the Diabeticast at this point. If you've enjoyed what we've had to talk about and you've enjoyed listening, please leave us a review on iTunes. And again, if you think it's a terrible waste of time, be absolutely sure to go to iTunes and leave us a review as sort of a cautionary tale for other potential listeners. Remember, nothing that you heard here in this podcast constitutes medical advice. It's all individual experience, and so you have to take that at your own risk and probably should not implement any of the things you heard here at home. And if you do, you're completely on your own, and we here at Living Vertical accept no culpability or responsibility for any bungled attempts to climb things and or inject oneself with needles because you heard about us doing it here. Until next time, do whatever you want until next time. I know that's what I'm going to be doing, but have a happy Thanksgiving. And who knows when I'm going to be back on here with another episode of the Living Vertical Diabeticast, but I'm sure I'll find something to opine about at length before too much time goes by.